My name is Ricky Day, and this is Nothing to Lose But Yourself. What's going on, everybody? I hope you are having an amazing day wherever you are, whatever you are doing. My name is Ricky Day, and once again, you have selected to tune in to my amazing, fabulous, incredible, wonderful, groundbreaking, okay, maybe it's just good, podcast called Nothing to Lose But Yourself, where we work with each and every one of you to find that authentic self that's hiding deep inside, to embrace it and to love it, because I'm convinced, as always, that if we can love our authentic selves as the creation of God that we are, then it eliminates much of, if not all, of the need for us to diminish other people just to feel better about ourselves. Before we dive into today's episode, I do want to remind you of a couple of things. If you are a social media kind of person, you can follow the podcast on Instagram or Twitter, Nothing to Lose But Yourself. And of course, you can follow me on my personal Instagram and Twitter, Ricky Day, RickyDay. Well, like I shared, today is the last episode of Women's History Month, and I thought it'd be a lot of fun to invite not one, but two dynamic and amazing women to join me. Also, these two women happen to be friends of mine for, well, a long, long time. And they are two accomplished, dynamic, talented, focused, and successful women in their chosen careers. One is a director of television shows like Girlfriends and Frasier, and the other is an acting coach to the stars and the would-be stars. I'm talking about Katie Gerritsen and Elaine Williams. So sit back, relax, and enjoy yourselves, and get ready to have a lot of fun, because we're going to be, well, pretty darn silly. And this is a pretty long episode too, so you know, you might want to break it up into two parts. That's all up to you. But I will say this, you're going to learn a little bit about Hollywood, a lot about being yourself, and you're going to hear three old friends having a good time. Sit back and enjoy the episode with Katie Gerritsen and Elaine Williams. All right, so this is the last episode of Women's History Month, and as you can tell already, it's going to be a lot of fun. This is a month dedicated to celebrating strong, dynamic, and amazing women, and I thought it would be fun to have a conversation with two of the more dynamic and interesting women I know, who also happen to be each other's closest friends, or something very close to that, and two women who I love and I've known for over, 30 years, something like that. Yes. They're also two women who have successfully been working in Hollywood in the entertainment industry for a very long time. And one of them is my very first white guest ever.
Oh my God. You are so happy your name is not Karen right now. That's all I have to say.
And her name is not Karen.
Wait, what did you just say?
And, no. And her name is not Karen.
It's not Karen.
It's Elaine Williams.
Don't worry, I almost just said it. My name is not Karen.
Right.
I'm about the opposite of a Karen.
But please welcome to the podcast, Elaine Williams and Katie Gerritsen.
It's a pleasure and an honor.
Full disclosure, I just re-recorded this intro so that I could tell you that she was the first white guest on the show.
If she don't act right, she'll be the last.
And I'm going to end the recording right now. Bye. So let's start with Elaine Williams. Elaine has worked in the entertainment industry for over 35 years in film and television production and development. She's an actress, a coach, and a senior acting teacher at Baron Brown Studio in Los Angeles, where she teaches in the Meisner technique. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Sanford Meisner, he was one of the most important and influential acting teachers of the 20th century. He defined acting as doing things truthfully under imaginary circumstances. And I shared that detail not because he's on the show, but because I've known Elaine as someone who does things truthfully under what we wish were imaginary circumstances. That's Elaine Williams.
Fair.
And our other guest is Katie Gerritsen. Katie is an Air Force brat who was born in Germany and who grew up mostly in Northern California and moved to Los Angeles some time ago.
You know what? We don't ever have to mention our ages. Let's just say I'm the same age as I'm Brad Pitt's age. Okay.
There you go.
Oh,
so,
my God.
Yes.
Oh my God. We're starting up. This is how we're starting out.
This is how we start.
I'm 58. Y'all can do what you want to do with that.
I'm younger.
And I'm the youngest.
True. These are all truths.
And we'll leave it there. But Katie moved to L.A. To attend the University of Southern California, as she says, a million years ago. There goes that time thing again. We've mentioned time at least five times already. She received two bachelor's degrees, one in communication arts and sciences and one in journalism. But Katie has worked in film and TV production also for over 30 years, with the last 20 plus as a director. Her directing credits include the season finale of the new Punky Brewster reboot, Two Broke Girls, Fuller House, George Lopez, and my listeners will love this one, Girlfriends. So as a matter of fact, she was nominated for two BET awards for her episodes of Girlfriends. She also received the DGA nomination for her debut episode of Frasier, which she went on to direct many episodes of over the years. And in 2012, she was the recipient of the Frank Capra Lifetime Achievement Award from the Directors Guild of America. Katie,
how that happened?
Because you're good. Katie, like Elaine, is based in Los Angeles, and she, of course, is a graduate of the University of Southern California. Trojans, fight on and all that jazz. And additionally, Katie does do private acting coaching as well. And most importantly for you to know before I wrap this wonderful bio up, she's the host of her own podcast, and she is in many ways indirectly responsible because she gave me the final push into me doing this podcast, as she had me a guest on Annie Lane, a guest on her podcast, Mojo Girl Madness. Mojo Girl Madness is a great podcast. You've heard previews and promos for it on my show. And so if you were wondering what it was and who it was, now you will get to meet the Mojo Girl herself. She's on hiatus from the podcast, but the episodes are available, so you can still listen to them, and I encourage you to do so. So that is Katie Gerritsen. That is Elaine Williams. And we have been friends for a gazillion years, and I am happy to welcome two of my favorite ladies to the show. How are you guys?
Yeah. It's good to be here. And Ricky, I'm so proud of you for starting your podcast, and it's absolutely awesome.
I mean, right?
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. How have you both kind of navigated the crazy waters in the last few weeks? Either one of you can start. I'm just curious. Elaine?
You know, I felt like a relief. I don't know if you guys felt a relief, but I immediately felt a relief. And it just still trips me out, though, that we are like a 50-50 nation. Sometimes I just think, what is going on? And how come we still can't bridge any gaps? And what is it? Because those trials and tribulations have not ended.
No.
That madness, and I will call it madness, of the Capitol, you know, all the vitriol and just the continued, but in me, I'll just go to what happened with the election. There was a shrug and a sigh of relief. There just really, really was. And there was just something that settled a tiny bit in me, hoping, okay, I don't want to have a disservice for all of the people who are maybe unhappy about the shift, but maybe we can get some work done and that can start to change the tune. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can get to work. And maybe some things can start happening. And that's what I really felt at first. And then, of course, with COVID, it was just like, how do we get this? What's going to happen? It has legit been a year since I've been teaching on Zoom. Like this week or something, it's like a year.
I know, me
too. And it just feels like we've been running, sprinting, running in the midst of being quarantined and stuck and just like running, but to where?
Right.
And it's still not completely clear. At least, you know, folks are getting vaccinated. That's starting.
Yeah. You got yours, right?
I did. I got that one and done.
Did you have any side effects?
Not at all. I don't know. Maybe I was just super, super lucky.
Good for you.
But I didn't even have a shoulder ache or anything. So far, so good.
Yeah, everybody processes
it differently. I got the Pfizer first dose. I get my second one tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Like a few hours. I teach a class at USC on Wednesday nights, but it's on Zoom. I'm actually looking forward to getting back to campus in the fall. But, you know, I'm a little worried about the side effects. but the first one was fine.
Yeah. I mean, everybody does respond differently. Yeah. Some people have gotten shivers and shakes and, you know, they felt a little bit sick, but it doesn't seem to have taken anybody out. My mother was like, have you turned green yet? She's been monitoring. So then I got to get her. Now we got to get her.
Two pieces.
We got to get her vaccinated. Jackie's got to get her shot.
Oh, she will. She will.
Okay, good.
She is ready to move and groove.
Okay, good.
And that's just what I want. I'm like, I want everybody to be able to move and groove and get out. But this new violence, it's like, now, wait a minute. We cannot come out of all of this and go right on back to the same darn ridiculous to me.
You know we are.
Behavior.
Well, yeah, I'm like, I mean, since the election, I mean, I feel the same as you. I feel like there's a little bit of a sense of relief. Thank fucking God that idiot didn't win again. But there's still enough people in Washington and the, you know, the gerrymandering, the everything still exists.
Voters' rights, just period. Yeah,
and the fact that the voter suppression shit is going on everywhere to the extreme. And we've got the, you know, people that don't want to overturn the filibuster and get the Voting Rights Act passed. And so, you know, come 2022, Republicans are going to take back the House with just redistricting, with just the census, without even having elections. And, you know, the only hope we have of maintaining any sort of, you know, control of anything of the madness is to get that voting rights stuff done. And I just, I'm like you guys, I don't understand the other 50% of the country. I don't really think it's even 50% of the country. It was almost 50% of the votes, but like the Republican Party is so small compared to people that do not associate with the Republican Party. I just think you have, you know, the Senate, the people that the majority of the people in this country live in blue states, live in the metropolises, live in the big cities, live in California and New York. And you look at even Texas, it's Dallas and Houston and Austin, the population centers are blue, but all those red states have two senators, just like all the blue states. And the Electoral College, which wasn't set up to have an equal balance, is, you know, it's going to continue to screw things up. So I don't know. The only, even though I felt a huge sense of relief after the election, and I feel like there's a light at the end of the tunnel with this damn virus. We're getting vaccinated. Things are slowly starting to, you know, get past all those ignoramuses that won't get the vax and won't wear a mask. And, you know, we're moving somewhat in the right direction as far as that goes. But there's a lot of work to do.
There is.
And
oh, yeah.
It was really, like you guys, causing a lot of anxiety. And I've always been super passionate about my politics, and it pains me to tune out, but that's what I've chosen to do. Of social media for the most part, I removed the stupid Facebook app off my phone. I hardly ever check into Twitter anymore. And, you know, I'll scroll through the pictures on Instagram, but that only gets, you know, so crazy. But I got to tune out.
But I wonder, is that really tuning out? I mean, in other words, there's enough avenues for you to get news without it being social media.
I know the important stuff.
Well, yeah, but maybe it's like it's more self-protection. It may be more ability to work. It may be less just falling into the herd of madness. Because
it's paralyzing. It was paralyzing.
It's debilitating and paralyzing.
Yeah, because where I just stare at the wall, you know, and
okay, we can't.
What
have
is
that.
The world
Take
coming to? Everything is downhill. You know,
no. If you get into all that, take the app. Isn't that funny? It's like you just take the app off your phone. You just don't check
right.
it. And I'm the main one to be just going through and looking at puppy pictures and stupid jokes and like a picture of a freaking tree and some photography.
Yeah,
you know, I love it. But then it occurs to me, I don't have to do that. There is a whole world happening.
I know.
There's a huge world happening.
I can get back to being a part of it.
And on top of all that, you guys live in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
It is legal for you to...
Well, it's not like we can go out right now, though.
But it's legal for you to herbally relax yourself.
Like I don't do that every day. I mean, I seriously wonder if I'm going to have any brain cells left. And maybe it's a good thing, you know? I don't know.
In this environment, maybe it is.
We do have resources.
Do you guys have resources? Do you guys have any like FOMO, the fear of missing out when you tune out of social media and stuff?
Well, I think I've just gotten, I just get addicted to it because I'm just an entertainment person and I'm a visual person and I just write it off like this is my work and this is my relaxation and But can I tell you, and you know this, as soon as you go to the beach for a minute and you turn off your phone, as soon as you end up sitting at a restaurant, finally, us together with a margarita, we ain't thinking about that dang on Facebook.
No, that's one of the pleasures of being older. You can we remember a time without devices, and I actually welcome it. So I mentioned at the beginning that we were all friends for a long time. We started out together as teenagers at Universal Studios. Yeah.
Teenagers, literally.
Literally teenagers.
I was early.
You and I were teen. You were in your 20s, Elaine.
Yeah, I was. I must have been 22 when I moved to LA. I had
Ricky
just
and I have known each
college.
Other since teenagers, right?
Yeah, we're literally teenagers. And so, you know, when you think about, I think we're in unique positions in many ways as older folks to provide some context as to how our journeys have played out since those days. So my question to you is the life that you imagined, the career path, the personal life you imagined, how has your real lived life kind of matched up to what your expectations are for better, for worse?
I never imagined. I was always in survival mode. I never projected that far into the future, you know? I mean, I suppose when I was younger, I thought, because it's just what you were supposed to think about, you know, get married, have a family, but I never wanted to have children and I didn't have children and I have zero regrets about that. Especially during a pandemic, but
because all my friends who are parents are miserable. Not to laugh at them, but Jesus.
I know, I'm sorry.
But you did just laugh at them.
I know.
There was some laughing at them that just happened right there.
I don't know. Elaine, did you have like some sort of like vision of what it would be when you were 40, 50 years old?
I didn't know one end up from a heads or tail and barely know it now. All I knew is that I wanted to come to Los Angeles. I did know that. I had two things, and that was it, because I wasn't exactly the most ambitious person. But when I got a bee in my bonnet, it was, I really want to move to Los Angeles and I really want to learn how filmmaking happens. And I don't know nothing. I don't know nobody. I don't know how to do it. I have really no ambition. It's not like I was like, I'd like to be this, that, or the other. You know, I liked stand up and that just turned out to be too freaking scary to do as a whole life. That
Elaine, you would have been so good.
But you see what it takes for people to really do it.
It's rough. This whole business is rough.
So I just knew I loved acting. I knew I loved storytelling. I knew I loved the arts. I knew I loved film. And that was the only thing I could imagine doing that I would stay in. And I'm not sure I ever thought I'd even make it this far. I didn't even know. But I knew I wanted to be here. And I got myself here in the weirdest, craziest ways.
Move to come from, you know, the Midwest out to L.A. I mean, I know millions of people do it, but... You know, kudos to you.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
And
that's a good idea. You know, actually, the guests don't necessarily know you other than that little bio. Why don't you guys both give us a little background on where you're from and what your kind of journey to this moment has been? Just a short version or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I'm from Fort Wayne, Indiana. And
that's Elaine speaking, y'all.
Yeah, born in South Bend. And Fort Wayne is a marvelous place to be from, and it's cold. So coming to visit my grandparents in Altadena, California for their 50th anniversary and seeing some little cute boy skateboard down the hill and, you know, having my mama take me to the movies in Fort Wayne on a big screen, the most fabulous thing ever, like the outdoor big screen, watching, you know, Marlon Brando and the Wild Ones. And every week we had this beautiful little arts program. So I was always learning how to animate and learning my parents put me in everything you could do in Fort Wayne that was for free and for cost, but for free, the park systems which we don't have anymore and we need, you could get things like kids could. You got exposed, right? Yeah. And that did it. That did it. And then I went to school, you know, at Northwestern, also cold, a beautiful place, marvelous place.
It's a beautiful campus.
And just so many of my friends and just the people who have built me, I met in college. And so that was a tough thing to move, you know, that. I fashioned myself living my life shoulder to shoulder with those friends who knew that I would make friends like y'all. So when you say, you know, kudos, I say kudos to you guys because I met a whole posse with us at Universal. You know, I worked every odd job. I worked every temp job. I had friends give me jobs and it just kept kind of rolling. And you either stayed here when you're from out of town and you just kept moving forward. Mm-hmm. It's expensive. And you just kept pretending it wasn't. You had to make your own for real. You had to make your own family because people are weird in L.A. It's transient. It ain't
it's
like
a hard place to live. You know,
it's
I don't know how we've done it this far,
but it's exciting. And the industry was here and so many mentors were here and friends were here. I don't know how it happened. A lot of people went back.
Yeah. But you
and
didn't.
One thing led to another.
I'm glad you stayed.
I am too.
I am too. Yeah,
I am too. And you, it's just wild the choices you make. I mean, I was working for the marvelous Suzanne DePass, who could not be
Wheel of Fortune.
Suzanne.
Well, Wheel of Fortune started it. The prize companies, Wheel of Fortune, and all that, right? Mm-hmm. And then I was just like a million temp jobs, just the most amazing, crazy jobs. Those are for later. We'll talk about that. But then I worked for Suzanne for several years in her production company. And that was like a PhD.
Oh, that's
I didn't know anything.
Sure.
And to see her creativity, to see somebody who wins an Academy Award for Lady Sings the Blues, to meet some of my best friends in that thing, to be in the mix of shows, creativity, producing, writing, casting. That was just crazy. That was a world I didn't even know existed. I knew there was an industry, but I did not know that there were players and people who ran it and that it was their dynamism and a little bit of their passion and drive and madness that keeps this whole thing going. I had no idea.
And no how idea. Did you become an acting coach? What was your segue into that?
Well, that came from me working in that and knowing, I mean, when you're working with kind of a titan like that, you realize that you can either continue to try minutely to help them, right? But you start to get inspired by them and you start thinking, what am I supposed to do though? And you start thinking, what would that be?
I still think that.
Yeah. But that's it, that's true inspiration, I think.
Is I think you should be thinking
show
that
you
until
a world that you didn't know existed. And then you start going, but what's my world?
Yeah.
And do I even have a world?
Yeah.
Because you could spend your whole life in that position, which is a pretty great one because it gives you a pretty fantastic life and it begins to move you. But then I started thinking, well, should I try a little comedy? Should I try a little acting? Should I try a little this? Should I try a little that? And I took a class at the Baron Brown Studio. While I was working, and I swear for goodness, Suzanne gave me that as a gift. She let me work part-time with her. And that never happens at the level that she is and the level.
Do you keep in touch with her at all?
I have not. And as I'm talking about her, you know, I'm about to be like, I need to call her and tell her.
Well, when this podcast posts, you need to send her something and say, listen to this. Because she taught you so much.
My dear friend, Lisa Mushaw, and I work together there. And like my other dear friend, Bernetta Jenkins and Gary Shaw would be in here. A whole bunch of us. We would have to sing her praises for the rest of eternity. And so would the industry. Because there ain't many black women that have done.
She
what
was
that
a trailblazer, pioneer, man,
trailblazer, builder. You know all that.
Yep.
She's amazing. And let me be clear, everybody who's listening, if you do not know who she is, Google
Suzanne
DePass. Please.
How do you spell her last name? Yeah.
small D E, capital space, capital P S E, and call her.
That
niece
was drilled
back.
Into you, wasn't it? Space.
Yes, it was. Get it right. Get it right. Get it tight.
She's
the
a
learning
legend.
Experience. I mean, it was just crazy. That's the fact great. That you'd be on the phone and somebody like, you know, Miss Diana Ross or Ms. Oprah Winfrey or heaven forbid, Mr. Barry Gordy would walk wow. through a door. But these were her doors mm-hmm. that were opened by her great, you know.
What an opportunity. Talent.
And this well, that was a while ago. That's the thing that people forget that's about. True. You know, we're focused on the progress that's being made now, and that's great. But this woman's been doing this since the 70s and earlier, actually. But, well, I mean, Jesus, she's a legend. She's amazing. Katie, yeah. what about you? Tell us a little about your journey.
As you mentioned, I was an Air Force brat, moved around the first few years of my life, but was raised mostly by my mom up in Northern California, single mom. She was a public school teacher. And I just wanted to get out of Dodge. And so I moved to L.A. when I was had just turned 18. I got into college here. I went to USC. And my college job, I was a tour guide at Universal Studios, and I auditioned for that the end of my freshman year. My first year, I did like work study, and I was a waitress and all that kind of stuff. But I started school thinking I was going to be a lawyer. I started in like this pre-law cluster, and you know, I feel like that's my original calling was to be a lawyer, and then I wanted to be a politician. Go figure. I would have like blown that career a million times over by now. But I ended up getting enamored by the movie business because of Universal and because of all the people that worked there. It was such a creative environment, and everybody that worked there, all of our friends wanted to be in showbiz. Some became very successful, and some transitioned into other walks of, you know, of life. And I took what's called the Directors Guild trainee test right out of college and passed and became an assistant director trainee. And then I, after working on a bunch of movies and TV movies, I segued into sitcoms and got my first shot directing on the TV show Frasier. And it went really well. And I got more episodes, and it kind of, you know, slowly built a career directing. And so I've been doing that for over, that was 1999. I got my first shot directing. And you know, I'm directing a little bit now, but I've had a love-hate relationship with the business. I've wanted to get out many, many times because it's really difficult. And I don't have, other than my wonderful friends, I don't have a huge support system because I don't really have, all my family's gone. And so, you know, it can be really tough on the old psyche. Yeah. And I've wondered about the paths not taken so many times. And it's not that I certainly can't be unhappy with the one I chose. I've had a great ride. And I'm certainly not finished, but you know, I still wonder what I'm going to do with the next chapter. You know, I've got teaching now, which I love. I love my students at USC. I loved my podcast. I may resurrect that as well. I love having a voice. I love having a platform, you
I
know,
can imagine you not having a voice,
right. Yeah. You know, and whether it's writing or speaking, I'd love to get more into public speaking. I'm one of those freaks that actually loves speaking to a room of 1,000, and I can usually do it better than a room of 2. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I'm glad we live in an age where not only can women have their own career and their own paths, but mostly, but that I have the choices at this stage in my life to try out different things. And so I'm at the point right now where I'm kind of figuring out what I want to do. I still love directing, but it's, you know, I do sitcoms, and there's, you know, not as many to go around as there are people who want to direct them. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm kind of figuring things out again, I think.
Well, Netflix seems to be trying to resurrect the sitcom lately. They've got two new sitcoms coming out and probably some more. You know, you had that other Detour, which seemed wonderful for a short period of time. Tell us about that. That was great.
Yeah, you know, there was a point where I had gotten married and I'd been and my ex-husband now, thank God, had said, hey, you can do anything you want. If you want to leave the business, you can do this, you can do that. I'll take care of you.
I can't with you right anyway, now. Anyway. I am like a teenager who cannot.
You know how with everybody, there's that moment where they say, hey, my ex-husband, and you, there's that pause where you're like, is she going to do it? With Katie, you don't have to ask. Katie, she's going to do it.
You think I'm going to sing his praises? Get the fuck out.
We don't expect that. Now, you know we don't expect that. Oh, mercy.
I've definitely have to click the explicit button on this one.
It just so happened that like everything came together at the same time. I was getting married. I found out that I was going to receive the Capra Award from the Directors Guild because I'd already had like a really stellar career that I was really proud of. And I'd done a lot of service at the Guild. So that factored into me getting that award. And I thought, what a wonderful swan song from that career would be. And an organization that I had done volunteer work with for a long time. I've always been, as Elaine knows, I've always been a huge advocate of doing volunteer work. And I think that's filled a lot of voids in my life. Mm-hmm. I never wanted to birth children, but I love children and I love working with children. So I ran for this organization I'd been a volunteer with was all of a sudden looking for a new executive director. And a couple of the board members came to me and said, we'd like you to throw your hat into the ring because we think you'd be, you know, great at this. And you know the foundation, you know the program and the kids and the staff. And it just happened because of the marriage and where I was in life that I could transition into a nonprofit. And so for like 3 years, I was the executive director of the I Have a Dream Foundation in downtown Los Angeles. And I was commuting to downtown into Watts and Inglewood and Boyle Heights. And I had classrooms full of kids all over the place that, I and my staff and the volunteers oversaw. And it was a great foundation. It still is. And I'm really proud of the work I did there, but it's a completely different lifestyle mm-hmm. and fundraising and, you know, the commute and all that kind of stuff. There's a high burnout rate in nonprofits.
Yeah. Yeah.
And after about 3 years, I'm like, you know what? I think I'm going to try to segue back into showbiz. And I'm pleased. No one's more surprised than I am to say I was welcomed back and was able to resurrect my career. And I think I also saw the handwriting on the wall with the marriage that I need to get into something that's going to take care of me down the road a little bit better mm-hmm. than the nonprofit. And because this marriage ain't going to last long. And so, there you have it. So I loved the I Have a Dream Foundation. I loved working with the kids. I still do. And it was a very special part of my life.
Yeah, that's great. You guys are both, you know, like these amazing people. You're very direct, very authentic, all those things that I appreciate in people. And then you're women, you're strong women, dynamic, smart women in a crazy business. How has your experiences, the people that you are, how have those people shown up in your professional careers? And how did, you know, being who you are kind of equip you to handle the ups and the downs and the pitfalls of your respective careers? And how has it been challenging sometimes? Because that's, I'm really interested in that. Like Katie is, you're going to be direct. You're going to let your opinion be known. And I can see that being amazing on set. And I can also see where that could go left.
Yeah, but I don't, that's not how I am on set. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm very work oriented on set and I'm not stupid. Outside of set, I express myself. but no, it's a separate place and I'm so focused on the job that you don't have time to get into, you know, mm-hmm. discussions about things outside. But having said that, I say what I think needs to be said a lot of the time. And to the detriment of me at some points in time, because not everybody wants to deal with a strong woman. Not everybody wants to have the opinions of a woman. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't have any regrets, but I'm sure there's people that don't want to work with me because I'm very outspoken about my politics. And what I think of people who voted for Trump, you know, but you know, that's who I am. Mm-hmm. And
probably feels better to be who you are with yeah. whatever the consequences yeah. than yeah. trying to be something else.
What else
for
can
other
you
people.
Do? It's such a drain when you're not being who you are.
Right.
And mm-hmm. The right people show up when you are who you are. That's something you learn over time.
Right.
Yeah. Is like, right. That took me time. I'm more of a people pleaser, perhaps, than Katie, even though Katie may
no, you are for sure
even more sensitive than me, but I have the people pleaser trait. So yeah. for me, it's like I had so many mentors that were helpful, male and female. I mean, I just had so many supportive bosses that were really like, they were like professors almost when I think about it now. It's like they just taught me how to be more direct. I had to learn it. I don't think I was the natural leader in that way.
I'm a little envious of that. I don't feel like I had the mentors that you had growing up.
Look, I needed them because I was still a mess with them. So that just shows you how many resources I need to get that right. But I'm still trying to get it right. But I always said that I'm surrounded by A-types. All of the mm-hmm. people that I hold very dear are just like direct and seem to be, even though they're so sensitive and little winky binky parts, my personality can see their true personality, but their work personalities are just like natural freaking leaders. I always respected that. And I'm more like, hey, you know, so I got put into positions where, hey, you know, didn't work. Part of it worked with the strong. I had something that was a great accent. I'm a great vice president for the president.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With great mm-hmm. balance and a great insider. But then I had to also learn how to be the president. And I'm still trying to learn that. And that is awkward for me and unnatural for me. And I don't always like it. But that's what's interesting. You can sometimes get in a vocation like teaching really did it, mm-hmm. where you have to become something that is not your gig. Mm-hmm. Part of the thing is your gig and mm-hmm. the other part is not.
That's exciting, though, to challenge yourself like that. You know, people think I've been called fearless with some of my endeavors. It's like, oh, you think about something and you just do it. And it's like, what doesn't mean I'm not petrified, that I'm not scared. And it's funny that you say you're not as sensitive as I am, because isn't that just awful that I'm outspoken and I put myself out there and yet I am one of the most insecure, sensitive people.
I can say insecure.
As strong as I am,
didn't nobody say nothing about insecure?
I didn't say insecure. What I said, even though you can say that, what I said
sensitive.
Was sensitive. Yeah. What I said was sensitive. Because that doesn't mean
you're not insecure. Yeah, there's some overlap there.
Yeah, but if you're going to be as direct as you are and as opinionated as you are, it does not work without sensitivity.
Absolutely not.
Your sensitivity level matches your fearlessness. And of course, fearlessness doesn't mean you're not scared.
Right.
It doesn't mean you're not insecure. It just means you feel like you've got to do a thing. So I have to keep learning that. I have to keep learning how to do that, because that's tougher for me. But that's where I've worked with so many people who had that trait. Some mm-hmm. of my personality type, some completely different than mine, which mm-hmm. is why I would say to the kiddos listening and the oldsters like us, it's like I've learned you cannot resist people who have a different type of leadership than you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You, because you'll miss something.
Yeah.
So the very strong women, since we're talking about women, the Suzanne DePasses and the Joanne Barons, who I now, you know, work with and for now, they have some similarities in their drive. Their fearlessness, but they have similarities. They're also very sensitive. Mm-hmm. They've got a whole picture. They're not robotic about it. They're very human, but they will not be denied.
Exactly.
And they will not try something because mm-hmm. they're afraid. And so I've needed that learning and continue to need that learning.
Oh, that's great. That's great wisdom to share with people that are listening. And, you know, I think we should retire the term fearless and fearlessness, because everyone's afraid,
anyway.
But some people just walk into and through the fear, but everybody's got some.
But you know what it is? It's weird. It's, I think the reason we like all these Marvel movies and DC movies and Game of Thrones, it's because you see these characters and you know they're vulnerable. Mm-hmm. You know they're scared. But boy, the hordes will be coming at them and I'd be running the other way. And they just pick up a sword and they are like, well, I guess I got to face it. Like their first instinct seems to be to face it.
And that's why we love them so much, because we're like, I'm going to grasp onto a little of what they got right now feel powerful.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And one of the best ways to do that is to do what Katie does and what candidly I do as well, which is I have an inspiration. I have an inclination to do a thing.
You do.
And before I think about it, put myself in it. Because once you're in it, you got to deal with it because you're in it.
Yeah.
You sit around, you can sit around and analyze.
And then once you do it, you find, oh, you know what? It's not quite so scary. After all, and being vulnerable, like on my podcast, everybody's like, oh, you're so brave. Cause I talk about a lot of personal shit and, you know, it's a lot of personal shit. And it was kind of freeing actually to get that open and vulnerable. And I think that that's important for all of us to do.
It's super
because we
important.
Tend to feel in this society, I think, so alone. So many people feel so alone with their how they feel about life and how they feel about themselves and how they feel about others. And to know that they're not alone, because other people feel the same way or they're going through the same kind of struggles, no matter what the outward appearance tends to be. It's I think that that's really important for all of us. I think if more people were vulnerable. It's one thing I teach my students at USC is we spend a lot of time talking about vulnerability and storytelling and how the protagonist must get vulnerable to complete their journey in almost every story you tell. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for all of us to do, to share and, you know, let other people know that they're not alone.
Absolutely. And what is life but a living, breathing story, a film, if you will, that
it's
we
your
are all
story.
Characters in.
It's your story. Journey. Absolutely. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
It's important.
It's funny the things that we choose in life, though. You know, I grew up in a family that, family is like, I use the term loosely. It was not a very good family. And I remember someone saying, a therapist saying to me once that there's a school of thought that all neuroses stems from the foundation of the fear of abandonment. And here I chose a career that's freelance, that has zero security, that you go from show to show to show. And a business where you can't trust anybody, you know, it's like, what is the universe doing to me that it's like all these lessons I apparently have to learn in this life, you know?
Yeah. But it was pointing you back to yourself. You know, I have a very vivid life in my mind and I actually enjoy it. And I enjoy, you know, my connection out, but I have a vivid internal only child kind of thing happening. But that's different than when you really find like a little humor and a little okayness, not a word, just with yourself. Mm-hmm. Because my whole journey has been, can I trust myself and my decisions? Mm-hmm. Or are they springing up from something that is, you know, from something else?
Yeah.
I think that too, though. Don't you? Yeah. Don't you, Ricky?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Because when you can trust yourself, you can put in perspective what everybody else wants for you and why you think you're scared of them and where you think you're comparing things that somehow made you feel lesser, or as if, I don't even know if lesser is the word, but as if you couldn't go to yourself first in your interior way, not just your intellect, but your intuition. And that's becoming a bigger thing for me. And that's giving me more of an ability to handle myself and handle all the energy that comes toward me. Mm-hmm. That horde where I would just want to turn and run like it's a comedy. Now I don't even want to pick up the sword unless the sword is just my way of thinking, unless the sword is a, you know, Katie, you know, I'm about to go for a word of God. If I'm picking up that, if I'm going for that metaphorical sword, I'll pick that up. But I'm enough.
It's hard to figure out, though, what to trust in like what in your gut you trust, you know, because you're thinking all these different things. It's like, okay, what really is going to make me happy? And how do I get more in touch with the feelings that make me happy and recognize when I've made a good choice? Yeah. And what about my psyche feels good when, like, you know, choosing not to do season two of my podcast, I was ready to launch and I just wasn't feeling it. And Mika, my guy, says, well, you know, this should bring you joy. If you're not feeling the joy for it, then why are you going to do it? And I'm like, you know, the voice of wisdom from, you know, the youngster. And I'm like, yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm really not feeling it right now. And when I actually told my producer and, you know, and a couple of people that were going to be guests, people that we know, Steve Vaught, Steve Tatum, I said, you know what, I'm gonna put it on hold for now. It just felt really good. I'm like, wow, that's what it feels like to make a decision that I'm happy with, you know? And I don't always feel that in life. I haven't always felt that. Sometimes I just feel like, oh, I got to move in this direction because it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but maybe you've earned it.
But so many people, aren't in touch with their inner life. People forget your outer life is just a reflection of your inner life. If you got all this turmoil and conflict and insecurity and all this stuff going on the inside, if you don't embrace and don't love who you are on the inside, then you're going to feel all that crazy when you go outside of your world.
Yeah.
You're going to feel the need to diminish other people to feel better about you. There's all that stuff that we do.
Yeah.
You've got to get your inner life together because it really is what guides your experience of the so-called outer life. Because you're dealing with a whole bunch of other people who are living their own inner life. And so when you interact with them, you're interacting with the physical manifestation of what's going on inside them, which is why you shouldn't take anything personally because it ain't about you.
You can't. And that's another lesson that you have to learn. You know, don't project your thoughts onto what other people are doing because 99% of the time you're wrong.
It's not even your business.
Exactly.
And you have to decide whether you want to be chaos or whether you even recognize that you are chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been chaos for many times and for a long time. And I can now recognize the difference between being chaotic and how nothing was really fruitful. I was blessed that I even had any fruit in those periods of my life where I know that I was so chaotic. It's just a blessing that people stuck with me. It's a blessing that I had. I mean, Lord have mercy.
That's a testament to who you are. People love you. They always have.
Everybody loves
you. On my podcast, when you guys were on my podcast, I said, I've always been a little envious of how everybody loves Elaine. I'm like, they don't even want to see me when we go out. It's like, why am I even there?
The lies. But I mean, it's like, and it's not everybody. But you do get, sometimes you're not everybody's cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's another thing.
And it's okay.
People pleaser.
And that's okay.
People pleaser. Yeah.
Grasping that it's okay is awesome.
Okay. Well, because you're just in a state of chaos trying to please because it's coming from nowhere.
Right. Especially as women.
You know,
we're supposed to please. We're supposed to nurture. We're supposed to be a certain way. And when we're not, and that ruffles some people because of their own issues, it's sometimes hard for us to wrap our heads around why, and we take it personally. We internalize it.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting? The men that I have known and know that have had the biggest impression on me are actually nurturing.
Mm-hmm. Mm, yes.
Within their strength, I can be around them and I can flourish with them and I can hear them through my chaos. Because they actually know how to nurture. Exactly. They know more about it than I do.
And
they've slowed down enough to listen to you and you don't, you know, and it's in this business, they're not plentiful.
They're in there though.
They are.
They're in there.
Yeah.
They are in there. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I they're in there. It's just, what are we looking for?
Right.
And what are we rewarding?
Right.
In ourselves and in others.
And you, Elaine, you just spoke something. What are we looking for? Because sometimes it's in front of you, but you can't recognize it because you're not ready to see it. And you don't know what you're looking for.
So or you already have it.
Or you already have it inside. Yeah. and you move right past
the whole grateful thing is like so important, so important.
It's centering.
You know, every time I start the spiral, I'm like, you know what? I am so grateful for things and people in my life. I mean, look at the two of you that I can call you friends.
Oh yeah.
We got a
gift early, and that's why I think that was for a reason, so that we could continue the journey and keep it moving and hopefully be able to pay it forward and give it back and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But so that we get sturdy enough, you guys already were, but to get sturdy enough to recognize that a little chafe, a little difference, a little ping of fear doesn't mean that somebody is not going to be the biggest blessing to you.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, not at all. Exactly.
And that one kills me daily. It'll be like, ooh, 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 no. This particular energy, ooh, ooh, no.
Yeah.
Like this is mirroring something in me I can't handle, don't want to handle, don't want to see, don't want to change. But if I can get through it, I'm gonna change for better.
Like, let me ask you guys a question. Have you guys had eliminated people in your life that you felt were toxic, and how was that experience for you if you did?
I have eliminated myself from people's lives because I was toxic, and that's what I realized.
Stop it.
No, because then when you look back on things and you go, okay, this person did that and that, and then you have to look at, but what did I do?
Yeah.
And so often I'm like,
Yeah, I'm with there with Elaine. It's a little bit of both for me. Like, I've absolutely eliminated people from my life who were toxic. There were very few. And for me, that's because, and I own this, I got lucky. We all get gifts. We all get gifts. And one of my gifts is discernment. Within 60 seconds of meeting somebody, I know whether I mess with them or not. And it's like never wrong. The only time I'm wrong is when the old sex organs are involved. Then I get blind and stupid.
Yeah. There
but,
you go.
But in normal circumstances, it's almost never wrong. And even people that I was cool with for a while and then kind of fell out with, I knew it would happen eventually. I saw who they were and how they interact with other people, but I knew how to exist with them and around them, but not give them too much to damage me, but to be there for them and have that experience, because I recognize the experience was important. So I've been fortunate that way. But then there's other things I'm not so skilled at. You know, we all have our
that
gifts.
That initial discernment is
saved
sometimes
me.
It's quick. Sometimes it's confusing. Sometimes there's a lesson. Sometimes there's a test.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes I'm getting a lesson and it's building me. Sometimes I see like, oh, that's an old pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm being kind of checked to see if I'm going to go back to that old pattern, or rather if I'm going to fall back into an old behavior.
Right.
It may not be the other person, but I'm ready to tilt over that way. That's a trip. But like you said, after us being so young, and being so young together for so long.
I know.
So long.
We're literally kids.
Literally kids.
Our livers are a little older than we are. But
my liver, my little gray-haired liver. But we've just gotten better at some facets of relationship.
And I tell you this, I really value, I mean, I've always placed, even when I didn't know that I was doing it, I've placed a value on friendships, an extreme value on that.
Oh, me too.
And it's been well placed, because lately I've been going through lots of family, death in the family. There's a lot going on. It's a short version.
Yeah.
And I not so randomly, you know, I mentioned something on Facebook, just play for my family or whatever. And I got a call from another friend of ours, Sandy Logan. Somebody I was friends with like 30 years ago, like you guys, and haven't seen him. She called me to check on me to see how I was doing, just literally to be with me. That's what friends do. And that's what matters sometimes. Sometimes there's nothing they can do, nothing they say, just being with each other. And so I encourage people to make friends. And if you're not fortunate like I am and have this discernment, then it's okay. You're going to go through some ups and downs with people, but don't be so easy to cut people off, because you never know what that foundation that you're building with people can lead to later. But we exist as human beings, you know, it's in community, whether it's our family, it's our social groups, our friends, we exist in community, and you can't cut yourself off from the world, or you cut yourself off from what nourishes you, which is love.
For sure. At the end of the day. For sure.
You know,
and I can get hermity. I can get lone wolfy. I can get happy to be. I can get all that. It's just that I'm lucky that I have sometimes the world just seems like it comes to me
I was going to say, because we're not going to allow it for so long.
Right. Right. Just like I have to be a part of it. But that's so right. I always feel better when I do engage.
Yeah.
So many people want to work in Hollywood, right? They want to be directors or actors or whatever it may be, but they really have no sense what it is to do that, what it takes to do that, what that looks like. I'm not asking either one of you to do a master class right now. That's too much, and we're not going there. But I would love for you, Elaine Start, just give people a sense of, you know, from your where you sit and where you've trained and worked with so many actors and being an actress yourself, what does that life kind of look like and feel like? What does it take in a person to do that? And what should they expect? Because they think it's, you know, this one thing, and we all know it's something very different. What mm-hmm. does that look like?
It's funny you say that, because I have an answer that just came from today. A friend of mine and a former student, hi, Santi, Santiago Salvice, posted a thing on his Instagram, and it was like just a culmination of all the stuff he's directed, you know, recently, and it just blew me away. And I haven't talked to him, though. He's one of those people that we're always like just in sync. And I was going to send him a text, and I said, no, this is not text worthy. I need to holler and scream in delight and pride at what he has accomplished. He's done it. I ain't done it. But because, you know, I had the chance to work with him and teach him. So we were just laughing, and I was just going, look at all you've done. Look at all, this is just crazy. What is happening? Everything's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, in class, that was my beginning. That's where some of the passion started. He said, I knew I wanted to act, but that's where I really started thinking, maybe I want to direct. Maybe I like the camera. And I picked it up and I just did a little this and this and this and this and this. And now 12 and 13 years later, he's there. And I said, it's so wild. It's the inspiration and the passion for somebody to try something that seems to be the key in Hollywood. Mm. Because you're going to get the resources. You're not going to know what you're doing. It's going to suck at first. You're going to suck. Every teacher can't be your guru. But the hope is that you get some inspiration. And you will find the rest of the resources because they're out there. Mm-hmm. But it's that inspiration. You're going to be rejected. You're going to fail. People are going to come for you. You're going to be insecure. You're going to cry. As some people have said, every single day, you're going to cry. You're going to quit. You're going to want to get out of the industry. There will be no industry. You're going to call that a them. You're going to think you have no power. But bit by bit, you're still going to want to do it. You're going to want to tell a story. You're going to want to pick up a brush. You're going to want to, and you're going to find people who will, at the very least, cheer you on a bit. And when they don't do it, you're going to do it for yourself just because you like it and learn to love it. And there's no way around the hard work. Believe me, I have tried.
How do I follow that? I mean, come on. So I get that a lot. People want to work in the business. And what do you have to do to break into the business? What? I don't know. I think Elaine is right. If you have this calling to be an artist, to be a singer, to be a dancer, to be a painter, to be an actor, to be a director, if you have that fire within you, you know it. And if you don't know it, I mean, you really need to examine where your gifts are, what brings mm-hmm. you happiness, mm-hmm. what, you know, where you should, because you want to go down a road that's going to make you happy. And not every road will lead to, you know, to fulfillment and a great career. I think you need to be open to adapting, to changing course. Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, you had a student in an acting class who thought he wanted to be an actor. And then he found that his real calling was in more crafting the entire story as a director. And I have students that are like that as well. And I think that that's important to recognize within yourself. What is your calling? And not everybody knows. I mean, I still don't know what mine is, you know, it's a lifelong journey. And I think this business is not for the faint at heart. It's a tough business. There's a lot of rejection there. I always say, have a backup plan. Don't quit your day job until you can really afford to sustain yourself. You will have to take some risks, though.
Right.
And you've got to fight through those fears and put yourself out there, because that's just what you have to do in this business. It's not always who you know, but you do have to network. It's not a meritocracy in this business. The most talented people don't always rise to the top because there's so many factors that go into success. Right. A lot of it is luck. A lot of it is who you know. A lot of it is, you know, where you happen to put, you know, your focus. But I don't know. It's a tough business. It's not for everybody. You have to realize what a freelance life looks like. Yeah. Even in the executive ranks, they may have a 9-to-5, well, a 7-to-7 job, if not longer, every day to go to. But I see the executive ranks switching up. You know, every time I get to know who the people are at one network, they all, you know, somebody new comes in at the top and they change everybody out. So there is very little security in this building, in this business. So if that's something that you need, then you need to rethink how you're going to express your artistic side and whether you're going to be an accountant by day and do theater at night, you know, with your local theater company or paint on the side or whatever it is. That's awesome. Just take care of yourself first and figure out what's inside of you. But know that it's not an easy road to take.
Yeah.
And be prepared to just not be good at first.
Oh, yeah.
Be prepared to be great and unrecognized.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes, here's what's crazy. Be prepared to have a mission that you aren't, it's not even the thing you're best at.
Mm-hmm.
You got to fashion that.
Yeah. It's true.
That's a word.
Yeah, don't expect success right away. You've got to, you know, most people have to do those 10,000 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, in every vocation, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what everybody has to do. And what
absolutely
about this? In every business, too, what if you do get some success straight out the gate and then crickets?
Yeah, and that can happen. There's a star syndrome in this business, no matter, or in any artistic endeavor, one would say there's a star syndrome in life, no matter what career you choose, where sometimes people are, you know, in demand and then something happens, the marketplace shifts and another type of person, another type of actor is in demand or director or whoever. So, you know, you can be a star one day, whether you're an actor, director, artist, singer, accountant, and then you're not the next day. So prepare for that and don't be foolish with your money, you know, save when you've got it good so you can enjoy the fruits of your label.
I got to get that one. I'm so
saving things hard for a lot of people, but no, Katie, you're so right about that. And I think honestly, that goes back for me to aligning your inner life with your outer experience. If you really kind of focus on A, what your skill set is, the things you're good at, and B, most importantly, what you're passionate about, you'll be all right. Because if you're truly passionate about acting, you'll be just as passionate and just as fulfilled acting in a 99-cent theater as you will on the big screen. But if you're in it for the celebrity, you're going to be miserable when the lights turn off.
And if all you want is fame and fortune, which seems like all anybody wants in any profession these days,
fortune, followers.
Yeah, then it's not going to be fulfilling and you're going to get it and you're going to just want more and you'll never be happy because you're seeking the wrong things
and you think
and it will never fulfill you.
Exactly.
You know what? It's something then to go on that old, go on your own road and of course create your own thing, but also seek out those people that inspire you.
Absolutely.
Alive and dead. You know, there's so many artists to look at that have lived lives that you're going to be inspired by for the rest of eternity. But seek out those people because they're also there, just like the other people we were talking about in the industry who lead in very specific, powerful ways that are different than the machine or the system.
Mm-hmm.
Seek them out
and people,
seek out those artists.
Build your support system. Build your mentorship system with other people and know that you're not alone out there. You know, my directing students, I tell them you don't have to know everything because you're going to be on set with a whole bunch of skilled people and
who know more than you,
who know
more than you,
who are there to support you. And you don't have to know everything. You can go to your DP, your AD, your production designer. You can talk about scenes with your actors, with your writer. You could, I mean, it's not all on you. I think thinking about the team aspect of showbiz is, and remembering that it is a team aspect, no matter what you do or where you are, is invaluable.
That's amazing. So, final question for both of you, because I'm super curious about this. What is your greatest remaining dream in your life that you're willing to share with listeners? What are you looking forward to doing for the next 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years?
Oh my.
Good Lord.
This is a conversation that's ongoing, because I've been trying to retire since I knew that retirement existed.
Honestly, right?
And I've been trying to just back out and just give myself a chance to read and look and search. I think what I really want is that space in between for another great idea for my life.
I know. I know.
Like I'm missing that thing that made me go, I have to go to LA. I haven't had that for so long that I'm like, wow, I've made decisions and things have pulled me. And that's been incredibly magical and exciting. And sometimes like, why? But I don't know. I'm waiting for that. I watch a show called a series called Halt and Catch Fire. I've watched.
Oh, I love that. I've watched the whole series. Oh my God.
I watched it way too
many times.
That
was one of my pandemic shows. Yes. So good. Yes.
But they have at the end of it, and it's at the center of it turned out to be these two women, right?
Right.
Partnership, two women and two men, whose partnership became the center of the series. But at the very end of the series, one of the last moments is
spoiler.
I know. Well, but it's one of them coming up with an idea.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
That gives me a goosebump that I might still come up with an idea. The other goosebump would be love has evaded me. It has not evaded me in that I have not ever been in love, but it has evaded me in whatever that would look for me. Like you talk about friendship, how there's really no difference. They're just different facets of yourself that you are expressing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how would I have a life with that in my life as a participatory, supportive idea, not just one idea, because I'm pretty Arya Stark with it. Right. I can just be traveling on my own with that wolf or without. But what would it be to have that additional facet of the journey and not feel like I lose myself?
I'm kind of like the same. I'm at a point where I'm actually trying to figure that out right now. And I was thinking, I was just saying to Mika the other day, you know, I think about the retirement thing.
Oh my God.
I'm not there yet, but I'm, you know, we're inching closer. Maybe psychologically I am, I don't know. But Elaine's mouthing, I'm there. Okay.
Careful what you ask for.
My God, I mean, we could have another 30, 40 years. That's a long ass time. So what am I going to fill that with? And I want that. Oh. I want what you're talking about. I want, what's that spark? What's that? One thing I do know that I want for my future is I want to share it. I want to, and I'm not talking necessarily about a romantic partner. You know, I hope Mika lasts forever, but if he doesn't, I always love sharing life with a partner, but I also would love to get into an endeavor with, you know, a small group of friends that we all get excited about, that we all can support each other with and create something, whether it's running a sports bar or building a business of, you know, whatever. But I would love to find that spark with some friends moving forward.
Halt and Catch Fire.
Like that, because I think I've been alone in my career my entire life, and that's not how I want the rest of it to go, you know?
Yeah.
I'd like to have...
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, director is a solitary thing. Wow. And before that, I was an AD. And yeah, as an AD, I had the most wonderful partner in the world. And we were together in that endeavor, Mark. But, you know, he passed away last year.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't have that anymore.
Mm-hmm. I get that, Katie.
Yeah.
It is something to create something, you know, with your buddies and to have that. It is something.
Yeah, that's a dope idea. I've never thought of that one, but that's actually a really good idea.
Everything's better shared.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think for me, I think I'm doing it. I'm a dreamer and I like a new something to tackle. And I'm always creating that and living that. And I know some people think he's all over the place. Well, I'm actually where I'm supposed to be, which is everywhere I'm supposed to be at the time I'm supposed to be there. And serving other people and doing this podcast and teaching.
And you look damn good doing it too. Look at you. This is like an album cover looking at your.
For real.
Really, you've got all the lighting perfect. Really, here I am looking like really a nice shade of orange on my screen. And you're like professionally.
It's crazy. But can I just say though, isn't that what it's supposed to be? It's like we're all an expression of whatever you want to say we're an expression of. And aren't we supposed to be expressing ourselves individually?
Absolutely.
And what else is there? Aren't you supposed to do no harm, but also follow your own guidance system as you fully trust it and have the experiences? I just love watching people have experiences and I get inspired. I just am like, wait a minute, you're doing that? Wait a minute, you're traveling there? Wait a minute, you started that? Wait a minute, you chose to do that and you just went and you did it? So that doesn't feel like all over the place to me. Mm-mm. That feels like a fully living, beating heart and human being. That's exciting. I am for we've had some fun and some laughs. I've had a life because we were talking about how laughter comes from so many things. Laughter comes from pain. Mm-hmm. Laughter comes from experiences. Laughter comes from your failures. Laughter comes from the silly.
And listen,
it's so important. I mean, one of the many reasons I love Mika so much is that not a night goes by where something doesn't happen and we giggle and laugh uncontrollably. And it's coming from deep inside. And it's just, sometimes it's the stupidest stuff, but we laugh. Mm-hmm. And we dance in the kitchen, you know, and it's like, you got to do that. And I just want that my whole life.
Yeah, okay,
to laugh,
that's it.
And dance.
That's it. That's what I'd like for my future. Thank you. We've hit upon it after all that. That is what I would like. I would like a Soul Train line in my future and for the rest of my
life. Oh, no. We know what happens on Soul Train line.
Last time I did a Soul Train line, I ended up with a ruptured ACL. I'm good on the Soul Train line.
That's not going to happen this next time. That was a.
Listen, maybe you're just not as good of a dancer as Elaine and I.
No, I'm going to dance very slowly. I know my limitations.
Listen, you guys, this has been delightful. Elaine Williams, Katie Gerritsen, thank you guys
so much.
Like
therapy talking to you guys, man.
Absolutely.
This has been great. Thank you guys so much for joining us. And I'm going to leave us all with this. Don't stop laughing.
Yeah. Well, that's my conversation with Katie Gerritsen and Elaine Williams. A conversation that touched on the power of friendship, being your authentic self in the entertainment industry, and how to build a life, build a career, and to move forward in that vision, no matter the obstacles. That concludes Women's History Month here on the podcast, but that by no means means the end of our episodes. We've got a few more before this season's over, so I'll see you next week. I'll see you in the coming weeks. And for now, I just want you to remember to go inside and discover, embrace, and love your authentic self. Because when you love your authentic self, it makes it much easier for you to love others. It eliminates the need to diminish others, and it helps us to build a much more beautiful, loving, and wonderful world, one conversation at a time. Again, my name is Ricky Day. This is the podcast Nothing to Lose But Yourself. It's available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow us on social media, Nothing to Lose But Yourself, on Instagram and Twitter. And my personal social media is Ricky Day, RickyDay, on Twitter and on Instagram. You guys have a wonderful week. Have a wonderful day. Have a wonderful moment that you're in right now. Be grateful for it. Embrace it. Live it fully. It's a gift. That's why it's called the present. Until next week, be well.